Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It's we're 1 year since Russia launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. UN says that more than 8,000 civilians have died, hundreds of children, and, you know, though the true death toll really, I mean, I don't think it's too hard to realize this, is probably much, much higher. The military casualties on both sides are estimated to have climbed into the hundreds of thousands. It's mind-boggling, really. But you know what? Amid all the horror, there are still signs of hope. And we have a very special guest with us here today, Jeff Semple. He is a senior correspondent with Global National News in Toronto, and he was able to take some time out of his day. Jeff, thanks so much for spending some time with us here today on The Roy Green Show.
Hey, David. Great to be with you.
Am I understanding this correctly? You recently returned from Ukraine?
Yeah, I got back from our most recent trip a couple weeks ago. And then prior to that had been, so that was the third trip. So we were there in the sort of the first days of the invasion in March of last year, then returned last summer for another 4 or 5 weeks, and then just recently returned from a third trip. And, you know, quite a difference, obviously, over the past year.
I can imagine. And Jeff, I would love to hear about that difference and how things have changed. But, you know, I'm hearing on the radio, I'm hearing from others, I've seen it in print. It's the 1 year anniversary. I mean, I don't know. There's something about that just doesn't sit well with me, right? We're not celebrating anything here. This is really about commemorating something, and hopefully there's a celebration coming down the road.
Yeah, well, that's it, right? I mean, obviously the word anniversary sort of has different connotations and sort of wedding anniversary and that sort of thing. But we're, in this case, not celebrating anything, except perhaps for the fact that very few people a year ago thought that we would even make it to a year, right? I mean, it's easy to remember. I mean, I remember, you know, just over a year ago interviewing a laundry list of so-called experts, all of whom predicted that, well, most were predicting that Russia wouldn't invade, and those who thought it would didn't think Ukraine would last more than a few days. And here we are a year later. So I guess if nothing else, that's a positive. But you're right. I mean, it's a tragic day on the calendar. The fact that this has happened, the fact that it's dragged on this long. And one thing I, you know, hear a lot from Ukrainians is they don't like the anniversary talk because they think it distracts from the fact that their country has actually been at war since 2014, when Russia went in and took Crimea and started fighting in the Donbass. And so really, it's been, you know, many years of war in Ukraine, but obviously nothing on the scale of the full scale invasion we saw this time last year.
Yeah, I heard a little bit of Zelensky's 50, I think it was about a 15 minute speech. And he talks about this as being one of the most painful days in Ukrainian history.
Yeah. And, you know, I like, he's always a quote machine, that guy, as we say in the business. He's a very good talker. And he has a line about how they woke up early and haven't slept since. And I just thought that was such a good line. I mean, we've heard so many versions of that from like ordinary Ukrainians who, you know, especially now after a year, are just like utterly emotionally exhausted and traumatized. I mean, obviously, particularly people in frontline communities, but even in cities that are further away from the front lines, like the capital of Kyiv, you know, where people are to an extent trying to live their lives. I mean, they're going to work, they're eating at restaurants, but like almost every day still there are air raid sirens warning of incoming Russian missile strikes, and every day there are funerals. And so I think people are really sort of traumatized by that. But I would say, David, despite, you know, that trauma and that emotional exhaustion, the resolve of the Ukrainian people, from my experience talking to them, has only increased, it would seem. I mean, like, you can't find anyone who wants to throw in the towel. I mean, if anything, they're more defiant than they were before. Like, they're not willing to give an inch to Russia, even if it would mean ending the war.
They really are digging in a sense, on kind of all levels.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, and I think for many of them, when I ask, you know, where is that coming from, right? You think after a year of this war, like, you would be looking for any kind of off-ramp. But it's, you know, a lot of them talked about just that they've paid such a heavy price that they don't want that to be in vain. I mean, I interviewed a 24-year-old widow named Lysia in Lviv who just buried her husband. They got married a year ago and just after the war started,
so
the invasion happened.
Like that, right?
Yeah. And then now she says even more. He was just recently killed in the last few weeks, and she said it has only strengthened her resolve, right?
Wow.
That we can't let them win.
So kind of a crazy question in a way, but the contrast. So you were there in the early days of this invasion. What are some of the bigger changes that you've noticed in that in 12, well, exactly to the day, 12 months?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the biggest one I think we alluded to already that at the beginning, I mean, it was like the whole country felt like it was under attack, right? Like no matter where you were, if the Russians weren't at your doorstep yet, they were coming, right? And now, clearly, Vladimir Putin's invasion has not gone according to his plan. And this is now, you know, I think Russia has about 17-18% of Ukraine's territory now. So that's dropped significantly from, you know, the early days of the war. And most of that territory that Russia has controlled and is fighting for is in the south and the east of the country, where you really see, you know, some of the worst fighting and like just communities and neighborhoods completely flattened. But then, you know, you drive, you know, the distance from, you know, the Donbass to Kyiv, I think, is sort of like roughly Vancouver, Calgary. I might be butchering that. Okay. I did look that up once upon a time. But it's, you know, it's far enough away that right. It's, now it feels worlds apart, right? Like sure. Kyiv, yeah. You can go have a craft beer in the evening or a latte in the morning. You're still under threat, but so they've kind of gotten used to it. Yeah.
Yeah, this is becoming a way of life. I was out last week with a friend for dinner. Ukrainian waitress, been here about 7 or 8 months, and it was very moving. You know, she started talking about her brother who was still there and her family that were still there. Dad stayed, and so mom did too. She came over on her own, and it was so, the drive home for me was so, I don't know, you know, help me out, Jeff. It was surreal. It was, I just, really? This is the world we're living in? Like that was kind of, right? Is that naivete or is that something else?
You know, that really reminds me too of like a lot of the scenes. One of the most heart-wrenching common scenes we saw like in the first days of the war were families being split up like that. Like there were the train stations and it was just heart-wrenching. Oh. Like you would see, you know, fathers and sons putting their mothers, wives, daughters onto trains, yeah. And then like, and not sure if that was the last time they were going to see each other. And that played out hundreds of times on every train platform in the country. Like it was just horrific. And now, yeah, a lot of those families are still apart. I mean, you know, obviously some never came home. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to wrap your head around that. I mean, just the scale of not only the lives lost, but the families ripped apart or separated.
Oh, the damage, the long-term effects of the trauma and the PTSD and so on are just, I mean, how can we know at this point? I want to ask you about a show that you've produced that's going to be airing in the next day or two. I'd love to chat about that. But do you have a sense, Jeff, from you know, the people you're interacting with and interviewing and so on, what's sort of next and a couple more years? I mean, it sounds like they're in it for the long haul.
Yeah, I mean, I was worried you were going to ask me that because I'd just been so consistently wrong. Right. For the past year. I mean, it's just, yeah, like I think,
well, how, know, can any, really does, how can anyone well, know, it. Right?
Yes, thank you for saying that. Yeah. But I think I'll tell you, and I'm not just saying this, I mean, it's become almost a cliche to talk about this sort of world famous Ukrainian resilience. We hear Vladimir Zelensky talking about how they're not going to give up an inch of territory. Like they're not willing to negotiate away a single piece of Ukraine. And that's the refrain we hear over and over and over again from the Ukrainian civilians. So to your question, like, where does this go from here? I just, like, I don't see, it's hard to see a negotiated settlement, period. Like the Ukrainians will not give an inch. And obviously, you know, Vladimir Putin needs at least something resembling a face-saving off-ramp,
right,
for his own self-interest. So, how do you reconcile those two things? I have no idea. But well, I will tell you, it's the American, especially the Americans and their attention span would make me nervous because not to take us in a totally different direction, but
I think you raise a super relevant point about just attention span in general. What's going to happen as it isn't as interesting as it used to be, or it isn't as newsworthy as it used to be? What then?
Ukrainians are very, very aware of that, and they were very happy to do interviews with us because they know that keeping this in the international attention, especially for, you know, like big funders like the Americans, is vital to their survival.
Global resolve, it seems to me, is essential. Hey, can you, as we wrap up here, Jeff, can you tell us a little bit about, is it called The New Reality?
Yeah, so the Global Current Affairs program is called The New Reality. It airs every Saturday at 7 o'clock, and we've got a special program this time around. We take you to a city I don't think anyone has seen or heard about before. It's this little city called Marhanets in south central Ukraine. It's right on the Dnipro River, and it has the unfortunate distinction of being located right across the river from a Russian occupied nuclear plant, the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant. Now, the Russians took control of this nuclear plant a year ago, and they've held it ever since. And they have rebuffed calls from world leaders in the UN to create sort of a demilitarized zone around it to ensure it doesn't get hit and potentially spark a meltdown. Instead, the Russians have used the nuclear plant essentially as an army base to launch attacks at nearby communities like Marhanets, which we visited. And they are defenseless. I mean, they wouldn't dare fire back, right, or risk triggering a nuclear disaster. So this community has been taking a beating. It's basically in a fight with its hands behind, tied behind its back. And so we went there in part for that, but also because there's a special relationship developing with this community of Marhanets and another community in Canada, in BC. And
super,
so we will
super
delve into
cool
that.
And super important.
Yeah, I hope so. And so that, we'll delve into more of that story on the new reality on Global.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.